Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
11 o'clock hour on a Thursday here in Kansas City. It's Cody and Gold. Alex Gold. Drew Nixon with you. Cody, I think, will be back tomorrow. That's the plan, at least. Hoping that'll be the case. Coming up in an hour, Sean Barber, former Chiefs linebacker, going to join me in the studio. We'll talk plenty more Chiefs-specific stuff that it's perfect. Like, we do topics. We have conversations. I can run by him. But there's certain things that I think are perfect to ask a football player. One of those could be what we're going to discuss here in a second, which is this idea of trap games. But also, Danan Hughes is going to join me in the noon hour, and then Paul Charchian at 1 o'clock to talk fantasy football. Here in about 8 minutes, I'm going to run by a fantasy football scenario that happened in my league today. And even if you don't care about my fantasy football league, it's something that I think we can all relate to, and I want to run it by. If you think it was handled properly by everybody involved, and if you would have done this trade or not done this trade, or you would have been upset if it happened in your league. So that's coming up in just a second. 913-586-7965. That's the Jays Southland Tow Service text line. So Ross Tucker joined us yesterday, and we asked him just the question about trap games. And we hear this a lot in sports. Drew and I got into a heated discussion once on a group chat with Cody about this. You and I were on other sides. Cody, I think, was kind of on your side. The exact scenario applies, you think, maybe to Sunday. So the Chiefs are playing the Broncos. Then they have the Bills. 3 weeks ago, the Missouri Tigers were playing the Auburn Tigers. And Missouri got off to that terrible start, if you guys remember. Brady Cook gets hurt. And you sent a text when they got off to a slow start, and you said, yep, I called it on my podcast. And Drew's got his college football podcast, as you guys know, here on Odyssey. And you said, trap game, looking ahead to, at that time, it would have been the Alabama game. And I was like, I just don't think they're playing well. Their quarterback also got hurt. And then Cody chimed in, and I'm paraphrasing all this, by the way, but like chimed in and was like, Gold, I don't think you ever believe in trap games. And I was like, yeah, I kind of really don't. And so here we are for this game this weekend, and I've already heard it from some, and I'll ask you guys on the text line as well. I've already heard from some that, oh, this Sunday, this is a trap game. Broncos coming to town next week, game against the Bills, both vying for the number one seed. And there's no doubt next week's game is a quote-unquote bigger game, right, for fans, playoff implications. All of that is true. But I don't believe a trap game exists because nobody ever has a clear definition. Like, that's the joke about trap games, is that we all say it whenever, like we make up a definition for it on the fly. Like all of a sudden on Sunday, if the Chiefs are down 7-0, like, told you.
Yeah.
Looking ahead. Like, we do this a ton in sports. It drives me crazy. Maybe they're just not playing well that day, or maybe the other team came out with a good scheme. If your quarterback gets hurt in the game, you sure as hell can't convince me it's a trap game, which was my issue with you on the Missouri game a couple of weeks ago. Do you think Sunday's a trap game?
I don't know. So in the NFL, it's a little bit harder, I think, to look at games as being traps, because I think it's a divisional game, so I don't think it's a trap game as much as when they play the Panthers. That's a more of a trap game to me, because it's a team that you're overlooking. Not that they're not overlooking, or potentially couldn't be overlooking, the Broncos, but it's a divisional game. They got a really good defense. I don't think that's as much of a trap game as maybe the Carolina Panthers would be, or something like that, where it's a non-divisional game that you kind of gloss over,
yeah,
and don't pay too much attention to. As much as in college, it's more of a thing in college, I think, definitely, than it is in the NFL. But I think in the NFL, like when the Chiefs play the Panthers, mm-hmm. that's a potential trap game because it's a team that stinks. At that point, their season's probably done. Who knows who's playing quarterback? It's a game you shouldn't lose at all whatsoever. The spread will be 9.5 points or whatever.
Yeah. More than that, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, it might even be higher than that. But a game where you shouldn't lose, but it's not a divisional game. It's almost a throwaway game that nobody else is paying attention to outside of Panthers fans, maybe, or Chiefs fans.
So you believe in trap games, but you don't think Sunday is one.
I usually
don't believe in them, period. And I sure as heck don't think Sunday would even qualify if you wanted to try to like convince me that they exist, because I think the divisional point is strong. Andy Reid in particular, and I know every coach focuses in on their division, but Andy Reid goes out of his way in the offseason, in the early portion of training camp, to key in on each one of these divisional opponents. And so there is no way when Andy Reid is the head coach that you're going to convince me that this is a game or an opponent they're overlooking, especially guys because of last year. Like, I'm way less likely to buy into that this year on divisional games because this Chiefs team lost to the Broncos last year. This Chiefs team lost to the Raiders, as we know, on Christmas Day. It's why I wasn't worried, 2 weeks ago in Vegas when we were out there for the Raiders game, because they were ready for the off the field Kermit the Frog stuff, for the fact that the Christmas Day thing happened. And I think when you're chasing history, both right now, perfect season. I don't want to really talk about that till after the Bills anyway, but you're chasing perfect history. At least fans are more than the team is, I guess. More importantly, they're chasing a three-peat. And when you're in a three-peat campaign, I'm not worried about this team being locked in or not locked into an opponent whatsoever. I'm just not. I also think easier to be flat, if we want to use that word. I'm not saying teams don't ever come out flat. That's not the same thing as overlooking an opponent. You can come out flat. There's so many different reasons why you might come out flat, and I'm not worried about that at Arrowhead. Going back to our conversation, why Drew needs to go to Arrowhead, because the environment's great. You don't come out flat very often at home. You just don't.
I think plus the fact that you have, to your point, Andy Reid is so focused, is so laser focused. There's other coaches who are that way too, but Andy Reid just is a different breed of head coach where I don't think Andy Reid is going to let them be unprepared for a game. The players aren't going to be unprepared for a game. And you mentioned the Raiders game. When teams keep on giving you bulletin board material, it's hard for you not to be focused on that individual game itself, as along with the fact that it's a divisional game. Where maybe if it's, I guess in a way, the Bengals in week one, they came out flat against the Patriots, a game that they should not have lost at all. They lost. They weren't the better team. I think those are to me, a trap game is you're going to come out less focused because you're looking ahead. Andy Reid,
I don't think teams, you're right, maybe in college, Chiefs, maybe it happens in college.
Even still in the NFL, though, for the Chiefs, it's different because I think they have Andy Reid as a head coach. And look, not to say the Raiders would gloss over anybody else, or not to say the Saints would gloss over anybody, but you look at the bad coaches and where problems happen, not that the Eagles might, they might just gloss over somebody where it's like, yeah, we're prepared or whatever, but we're looking ahead to when we play the Cowboys or when we play whoever. I think the Chiefs will never have a trap game, because they're going to be over-prepared for that opponent in that given week. I still, like what you said and what I said earlier, I think it's more of a college thing than it tends to be for an NFL thing, because seasons don't live and die on one game in particular necessarily in the NFL, is where they kind of do sometimes in college.
I just think sometimes, like in general, I'm not specifically you, but in general, like it becomes, anytime in college, even like it's just
very common,
very easy thing for people to say when like an opponent or a team that they we're looking at just isn't playing well. Like we just automatically assume it's a trap. Like they have a ranked game after that, and the game before they're not playing well. We just way too easily at times like, oh, trap game. We don't factor in, was there an injury? Was there a opening kickoff return for a touchdown? Does that mean it's a trap game, or just, hey, the other team saw something on film and they had it schemed up to block a field goal or whatever? Like sometimes that's why I laugh at the trap game stuff in general, is nobody has a true definition. There's always like, well, in this scenario, because without factoring in anything else, but I understand someone says like the Chiefs are known for trap games. They slept. Someone said they admitted they slept through the Christmas game last year. But what was the what was the trap though? Like, or they just have a bad day at the office? It was on Christmas Day, and they came out flat, and there was just a lot of factors going into that game in particular. Like, we all know that was a terrible loss for them a season ago to the Raiders, but. Was it a trap game or just, hey, it's the NFL. It's hard to win. You can get complacent. You can.
What was the comment though on it? Like, if the what was the comment of we weren't, because it was Mahomes that said this, correct?
Because the next week they were playing your Cincinnati Bengals. I think that's what the texter is referencing. Were they overlooking it because they had Cincy next week?
And it was Christmas time and they weren't as focused.
Was that a trap or just, you know, it is what it is? Like,
I guess that's where it depends on what your definition is of a trap game. I think it's different for everybody in college.
I just think the bad performances are so many factors. It's an 18, 19 year old kid. Did he do bad on a test? Did his girlfriend break up with him? Yeah. We find out his friend did that. Like, there's so many things that can happen in life that I think also impacts a young person more heading into a game than the 32 year old veteran quarterback. You know,
you're saying where there would be a lack of focus potentially.
Correct. Yeah. Who knows? Look, do I have a definitive way to prove my point on this? Like 100%. No.
I don't think people who say that trap games exist do either. Though.
No. That's exactly what it is. I'll ask Sean Barber this. I know he's probably got a good perspective as a player. We had Ross Tucker on the show yesterday, and we asked him about that as well. You can go back and listen to the podcast of Ross Tucker when he joined us up on our website and also the Odyssey app. Okay. I want to run something that happened this morning by you guys, and it's not because I want you to care about my fantasy football team. That's not what this is. You shouldn't care about my fantasy football team. I don't deep down care about your fantasy football team, right? Nobody cares about anybody else's fantasy football team. But you can relate, I think, to something that happened if you've ever played fantasy football. So I am in a 10-team fantasy football league with some friends. It's a pretty good-sized buy-in, so there's a good amount of money on the line. It's a keeper league. That's relevant in this conversation as well. I woke up this morning and I saw a trade went down. And the trade involved the third best team in the league and the worst team in the league. And as I said, it's the keeper league. So it would make sense that the worst team in the league might be trying to make a trade to set up keepers for the future. Nothing wrong with that. That's smart. The problem is, number one, for context, the trade involved the third best team and the worst. They both happen to be brothers. I think that's relevant in this conversation. The other one, the third best team got Jahmyr Gibbs. Pretty good running back. The worst team in the league got Rashee Rice and Jonathan Brooks. Rashee Rice, I don't have to tell you guys, is on IR. And likely is going to miss some games to start next season due to a potential suspension. So to me, the keeper talk around him is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Then, Jonathan Brooks hasn't played an NFL game in his career. He's a rookie. He's been on the PUP all year. He's finally going to play this weekend. Oh, and Carolina signed Chuba Hubbard to, what, a 3-year extension this morning? They're running back. So that tells you they have plans for him to be involved in their offense going forward. This was an absurd trade. Am I wrong? I just responded initially
with what I just said.
And then everybody else in the league started texting and it became a whole issue this morning. Ultimately, the commissioner stepped in, even though we don't have a veto policy. And the commissioner said, I'm overturning this trade. So you guys tell me, was this handled properly or not? Do you think this trade should have been allowed? I said it was an absurd trade. Absolutely ridiculous. The brother thing doesn't help. I'm not accusing them of colluding, but it's understandably sketch. And then the trade is just terrible. The one guy is getting a starting running back. The other is getting a player that can't play this year and probably won't play to start next year. And a guy that we've never seen play in the National Football League. That's a terrible trade.
I think I'll be honest. So somebody said for a dumpster loser team, it's a fair deal and not a smart deal, but a fair trade. Technically, any trade is a fair trade, I guess, if it works. The thing, though, that if they weren't brothers, I think it makes it a lot less harder or a lot more harder to say this is BS. I think the fact that they're brothers already is a little bit sketchy. One's trying to help the other out. Yeah. One's like, hey, you give me Rashee, we'll be all right for next year, even though, as you mentioned,
That was a
not
I mean,
playing
that trade
this year,
is
and
so
suspended.
Bad, man.
It's not good.
That trade is
100%
so
sketchy.
Freaking bad. So the commissioner overturned it, and then it became a whole debate whether or not, you know, we don't have a veto policy. We had a veto thing for vote.
It was overturned.
We had it for vote this offseason to add vetoes. That was my proposal, by the way. And people didn't want it.
I bet you have it next year.
And I bet you we
for
will.
For this reason.
Yeah. I mean, this was such a bad trade. It just a very bad trade. So that was the controversy.
Someone said they went through a similar thing last year.
Uh-huh.
And it happened between two brothers. One was the commissioner.
You just got to be careful. Like, and I'm not saying that you can't be in a league with family members and do trades, but you got to know if the trade is that sketch, you just know you can't even try to push that through when it's like, if he was trading with somebody else in the league, I still would have said, oh, this is an absurd trade, but there wouldn't have even, and I probably still would have hated it. But then you add in the other layer and it's terrible.
Yes. Yeah. There's definitely some collusion going
on.
So this
is Gold. You had to be one of the most annoying guys in your league. I'm not the commissioner in the league.
I will say this.
I'm not the commissioner in that league.
Hold on.
Somebody else vetoed it. Not me. I sent out was the emoji in response to the trade and majority of the league agreed.
The reason why you are not that guy in this discussion, you never want to be that guy. The reason why you're not Gold is because you said, it's like it's just a friendly league where everybody just got up and put there's some gain on the line. There's a prize on the line.
Text line is split because some people are saying that, hey, if you didn't have the veto policy, then you shouldn't do it. But there's also a huge chunk of people on the text line saying, I'm very much anti-veto guy, but that's bad. And that's the thing. Typically, I don't think you should veto trades because, look, if both parties agree and it's a trade, so be it. That's life. It's the fact that it involves the third best team and the worst team, players that haven't played or can't play this year. And obviously there's the family connection part of it.
I think that what you did is not out of pocket. Your reaction in bringing it up and being,
it's not a dynasty league. For someone saying it's a dynasty league, like it's not. It's a keeper league. Dynasty league, I think, yeah, then it's not an issue because you could have Rashee Rice on your team for the next 5 years or Jonathan Brooks for the next 5 years. It's a keeper league. That's why I think it's a problem.
How many keepers do you have?
Two.
Okay. And they can't be picked in a certain, there's like round.
And you get rounds. So like Jonathan Brooks would be your 10th round pick next year. Wherever he was drafted this year becomes the grade for the player that got traded.
Yeah. I just don't think for you to bring it up and be that guy who's like, no, this is BS. And for you to bring it up there's a prize on the line that I think if you were playing for a prize and it was legitimate outside of,
we got a good buy-in. This was a multiple $100 buy-in.
In terms of buy-in, 100%, everybody should be irritated at this trade because the winner gets some money. Like,
so what's the exact buy-in? $250 a team.
You absolutely had every single right to say something about it.
Yeah, someone says they need to be disqualified. I'm not saying that at all. My phone is blowing up. People from the league are texting.
Oh, right now,
listening to the show. Says I'm leaving out info. The individual. I think I've shared all the details that are needed. For this
what
to be
info
discussed.
Would you be leaving
I don't know
out
what info
of.
I'm leaving out. I said where there are in the standings. I said the family connection. I said what the trade was. I don't know what details being left out. Anyway, just wanted to run that by you guys. I'll ask Paul Charchian about it coming up in the 1 o'clock hour today. All right, let's get to it, Drew.
Well, I have to pull it up. Give me a second.
Ah,
the trash of the
trash
day is coming
of
up
the
in
day.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Trash of
the day. There we go. There we go. All right. Trash of the day. This one takes us to a bizarre scenario that I never really thought like this could happen or would be in play. So we go to Oregon where there was a cyclist. Okay. And unfortunately, the cyclist broke his nose, bike gets smashed, because a vehicle ran into him. So very lucky to be alive, obviously. Could have been way, way worse than just a broken nose smashing the bike. So this 71-year-old is riding his bike. Vehicle hits him. Breaks nose. Bike smashed. Has to go to the hospital. He was pedaling through a small town, it says, near the Columbia River. This happened back in October of 2022. You'll understand why I'm bringing it up now in a second. When an ambulance ran into him. Yeah, an ambulance ran into him. He's 71 years old. So, the reason why this is getting discussed is the ambulance plowed into him allegedly while trying to make a right turn, crushed him underneath the wheel of the ambulance. I mean, this guy's very lucky to be alive.
Oh, no, yeah.
Very lucky to be alive. The crash left him covered in blood, destroyed his bike, has caused him long-term injuries. He says reduced grip and decreased range of motion. Here's the kicker. The ambulance company sent him a bill for $1,862 for giving him a ride to the hospital.
What?
I don't know. He's suing him now for this.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I don't know about you. If you, the ambulance, run into me while I'm riding a bike, and obviously I had to go to the hospital, can this one be on the house? Can this one be on the house? Hey, we got you. This one's on the house this time.
I don't think there's any other choice that you have but to do that. The audacity to send him a bill. That's terrible.
This one's got to be on the house.
The audacity to do that. That's bold.
He's now Now here's this is where it gets a little. He's now demanding $997,000.
That's a specific number
for pain and suffering, along with payment for medical bills. The Columbia River Fire and Rescue declined to comment on the story.
Do you think he gets all that?
I'm not saying that $1 million is a justified resolution or settlement, whatever term I need to use there. Restitution. But he should absolutely never have been billed for the hospital ride when you actually ran into him.
If that were to have happened, what would you ask for? I don't think I would ask for $997,000. I think
pain and suffering is a normal thing. I don't doubt that he's had pain and suffering or mental anguish or whatever they call it. I think there's probably some dollar amount. Determining that, that's obviously up to a jury to decide if they think that's a dollar amount that makes sense, or a judge to determine that.
Is that how much you're asking for?
In this exact scenario?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm not dealing with the injuries. I don't know what kind of pain. If you lost motion, if that's true, and you can't grip onto your bicycle or grip on anything. I didn't know how to go that route. Sorry, Drew. Maybe so.
I think your point's fair. It depends on, like, did you lose grip or forever? Or
would hate that for that to happen, wouldn't you?
Oh, no, that would be brutal. That would be brutal.
So I don't know if there's, we'll have to update this one when there's when there's a resolution. But that is that's the trash of the day. The odds of that, like, it's bad enough to get hit by anybody. I mean, in a car accident, let alone you're a cyclist, you could have died getting hit by a vehicle. But it's the ambulance. Now, on one hand, you would say, hey, I guess if at least they had medical personnel on the scene immediately to help me, that would be one way to look at it. But I can't believe you're billing me. Like, you guys hit me. This one, you just got to, like, hey, it probably was just an automated billing thing, don't you think? Like, hey, we didn't even think about the cause of the accident. Like, hey, you're getting transported by ambulance. This is what we charge.
You would think, too. I mean, like you said, the fact that he's still alive. I mean, for how the story describes the accident, yeah, that's crazy.
Someone said, listen here, they're overcharging him, so he's just returning the favor. Someone else has got to take into account the lawyer fees. Yeah, a huge chunk of the $1 million that they're asking for, a huge chunk would obviously go to a attorney fees. Someone says, you're always going to ask for more when you're really going to get. Someone says, maybe a softer grip, Drew, would be more comfortable. What do you think about that?
Grip strength. I don't know. Is he able to squeeze his hand at all, or is it just...
I don't know.
You know?
I don't know. I'm not sure. He's 71 years old. That's the trash of the day.
Yeah, that makes it tough as well.
Up next, let's get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Talk more about this offensive line, more about what Cincinnati and Baltimore are going to do tonight, how it relates to the Chiefs and the number one seed conversation. That's coming up next on Cody and Gold.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour, and we'll be talking plenty of Chiefs really for the next 90 minutes or so, honestly. A little Chiefs Red Half Hour here. Then at noon, Sean Barber, former Chiefs linebacker, going to join me in studio for at least an hour. Danon Hughes for his regular visit at 12:10 on the phone. He will be on the call Sunday afternoon out at Arrowhead. It'd be good to get his perspective on what we saw from DeAndre Hopkins in just his second game. And I was listening to Nate Taylor, who was on with Fesco and Dusty this morning, and Nate was even saying, like, hey, DeHop did that, and he's still kind of running basic routes. Like, he's still not even...
It's crazy to think about, yeah.
That's what's amazing about the production. And Drew just told me, I think our video stream is up now. So you guys, if you're used to watching the show on YouTube...
Should be able to.
...and Twitch, Twitter, all that, you can hopefully check out the show there and interact there as you guys normally would. So sorry about that. Video stream, I think, is good to go for the rest of the show, hopefully, right? That's the hope. All right, let's talk about the Chiefs offensive line a little bit here, though. And earlier we mentioned how I think it's a good test for the Chiefs defensive line, because in a couple metrics, the Broncos are the second best offensive line in football. So this defensive line is going to be tested. Manufacturing blitzes will once again be key for Steve Spagnuolo. What about the Chiefs offensive line, though? I think this is all about getting to the point where they were in January last year. You guys know there were concerns about the offensive line throughout last season, in particular Juwan Taylor. And then by week 12 or so, I would say the holding calls diminished at least enough. And you felt better about the situation that you had. Even Donovan Smith, when he went down for four games, Wanye Morris came in at that point and was fine. And that's probably a great way to describe what you're getting now, right? It's fine. Moments where he stands out, never a good thing for a tackle. Kingsley Suamataia, very quickly on in the season, was benched for Wanye. And could they upgrade that position? Yeah, but they're not. The upgrade's going to have to be through development in season. They didn't make a trade. You're not going to trade for a tackle in season unless you were getting Cam Robinson, which is what the Vikings did because their tackle, Darshaw, was out for the season. They're also paying Cam Robinson a ton of money. That was not a move the Chiefs were making, nor should they. So the improvement on the O-line is going to have to just come through coaching and more playing time. Let's not forget Wanye Morris still has not played even a full season worth of games, right? Like four last year, and what are we, eight games in of his career this year? So he hadn't even played a full NFL season. With that, I think it's fair to say there's still room for him to improve. I don't think he's a finished product, which you would like to think would mean there's some improvement. And that's all this is about when we talk about the Chiefs offensive line. By the time they get to January, can they elevate enough? Because last year in the postseason, the offensive line played its best football. It's not a coincidence that that's also when Patrick Mahomes played some of his best football, when the team as a whole was like making less mistakes, didn't feel like they had a press. And we all know they went on the road throughout the entire postseason other than the wild card weekend. End up in the Super Bowl, and here we are talking about a three-peat. I think the same thing applies. Like, yeah, I would like to see improvement against Denver from Wanye Morris. Improvement when they'll need it in a tough road environment up in Buffalo next week for a huge showdown. But I think you just need to look for gradual improvement, and can they get to a certain level by playoff time? Mm. One thing that has already happened with this team in season improvement-wise for 3 or 4 weeks is how much discussion we have the first 5 weeks about the red zone and how that was a problem. They're not successful in the red zone. Really, since the New Orleans Saints game, so Niners, Raiders, and Bucks game, they've been way better in the red zone. They've been way better on third downs. Those are things they've improved on in season. And with the Kansas City Chiefs more than any other team, it is truly just about gradually improving by the time you get to the playoffs. Every team would like to say, we're playing our best football come playoff time. Duh. The Chiefs have actually done that, though. That's why, I look at Detroit, Detroit is great. Detroit is really, really good. They're probably the best team right this second in football. In terms of, like, if you were playing in a game right now, the Lions probably look the best. And I know they're not undefeated, and the Chiefs are. And it's okay to say that. We don't have to freak out. But they're peaking. Like this is as good as it gets for the Detroit Lions. The Chiefs are nowhere near peaking. Not even close. And part of that equation for them to eventually peak, ideally, in February, in New Orleans, at the Super Bowl, that is ultimately where the Chiefs are going to have to be, and that's what the Chiefs can do. So don't be worried that Detroit might look better than Kansas City. Don't be worried yet about the offensive line. Let's see where this thing continues to develop. You know what you're getting from the interior, but it's all about where they're going to be at in January and ultimately in February. Now, one of the teams that they might end up facing in January or February could be playing tonight. So Thursday night football game, Baltimore and Cincinnati. We started the show talking about this a little bit. And I told you guys, it's very simple. I don't know if you're a Chiefs fan. If you're a Chiefs fan, why you would not be rooting for Baltimore to end this thing tonight. Just put the Bengals out of their misery. Put Drew out of his misery. False hope is a bad thing. We should all be hopeful people, but false hope also just sets you up for massive disappointment, and you'll be in a funk for a week or two, Drew. We can't have you in a funk for a couple weeks around the holidays. I don't need the reality to set in around Thanksgiving for you when you're with your wife and having a great Thanksgiving. You don't need that. Why not have that funk settle in, you know, Monday when you realize, or tomorrow when you realize that your team is a four-win football team that also got swept by the Baltimore Ravens, and it's done. And if you're a Chiefs fan, you want this to happen because Baltimore is not getting the one seed anyway. They're not. The math doesn't work. It is a Chiefs-Bills conversation. Maybe you want to talk yourself into the Steelers for the number one seed. That's it. So it's okay if Baltimore wins tonight. Why not knock out a team? Why not just eliminate a team from playoff conversation? That's what Baltimore can and I think we'll do tonight, as my guy Sean Barber has stepped into the studio as well. He's bright and early. Look at early. I love this. He's early. 20 minutes early. Former Chiefs linebacker. What's up, Barber?
What's the deal, Holyfield? I see you in here clamoring for the fall of our Bengals. I mean, what web we have weaved since week one? Because I'm pretty sure I would think I was pretty much the only guy on the fall of Joe Burrow and the Bengals. I knew this wasn't their year, but obviously everybody sees through some Drew-colored glasses.
Yeah, we're going to get to your guys' bet in the noon hour. I understand there's some outstanding bets.
All over the place around here.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the floor in the noon hour after we talk to Dane and Hughes, and I can't wait to have him on the show as well. Then I'm going to give you a few minutes to call out. I'm going to give you the floor. You call out. I know I owe you lunch, but that's a separate off-air bet that we made. You call out whoever owes you from this station.
One by one?
One by one. Oh, it's going to take you a while. I want to give you some time in the noon hour today. You can go one by one. You can lay out the bet what people owe you. And yes, we do know that our producer, Drew, owes you from that Cincy game all the way back in week two, as in 2 months ago. So we will get there in a second, but I guess while I'm having this conversation on the Thursday night game, I'll just ask you right now, I'm excited for the game tonight. I really am. I'm sure you are as well. What do you make of these two teams right now? I know it's the Chiefs right half hour, but it impacts the Chiefs in a huge way.
Always. Whenever there's a contender for the AFC title, that's going to be a future contender as far as the playoffs with the Chiefs, you should pay attention to it all year long. I think when I look at it, you want to think about the highs and lows, and you want to think about the Bengals, when they play their best ball, are they feasibly a contender against the Chiefs? And then more than likely, so far this season, they've been playing some subpar ball, and that's kind of what put them in the position they are right now. But, I mean, they're a little battered and beaten up. No Zach Moss anymore. I think they acquired a different running back.
Yeah, Herbert.
Herbert, what kind of shape he's in, and how can he learn the offense, how quickly? They've rode Brown really hard over the last few weeks. He's paid off as far as stats, but I mean, is that win category? Joe Burrow's, he's having a good year. I mean, I think statistically he's having a decent year, but when it comes to winning the football games, that's the category that I think all of these quarterbacks would definitely trade in. Multiple passing touchdowns, all the QBR stats, everything that matters to everybody else. If you could trade those in and get a couple more wins, When it comes to the win losses, I think that's the category we got to look at is where they're coming up a little bit short. So I think we all know Cincy's season, whether it's tonight or in 4 or 5 weeks, their season is over. This is not a season for them to hang their hats on. And even on the defensive side of the ball, Erickson, I mean, he's having a right. He's the number one in the league as far as sacks, right? Sacks.
Henriksen has got 11 now. My goodness.
So when you
he had four last week.
When you're focused on all of these individual awards and accolades and goals, but the number one focus, the team goal, is to win ball games. You gotta sacrifice a little bit of self in order for the team to rise to the top. And I think that's the one thing. Over and over again, we talk about the Chiefs. We talk about what are they doing? That's, I mean, not light years, but just at a higher level and more consistently than everybody else. They're playing their brand of game for three quarters. They're finding ways to win in the fourth or overtime, and they're not delineating from their goals each week of what aspect of the game they're trying to get better at. They're not worried about the Bills coming up in 2 weeks. They're not worried about the Broncos. That's the opponent, but they have something internally that they want to focus on this week for them to be better and more prepared for the end of the season. And if that matches up and meshes well, then we'll score 30, 45 points. If it doesn't, then we'll get to the end of the game and we have to do whatever we have to do to win. And I just like that method, and I've seen it happen so many times over and over again for the Chiefs. And that's why it's such a hard bet to bet, you know, for the Chiefs or against the Chiefs, because you just don't understand internally what are they working on this week and how that meshes up against the opponent.
Yeah, Baltimore too. So both these teams tonight defensively are just not where they've been historically or in the last 4 years. I mean, historically, I mean, the Ravens have always thought, you've always thought, I mean, if I just mention the name Ravens anytime in the last 20 years, you're like, oh, their defense must be great.
Ed Reed, Ray Lewis.
Not this year, though.
Suggs, that's what pops in my mind.
For sure.
Ed Reed.
Of course, they've had some unbelievable players go through there in Baltimore since Harbaugh has been involved, and even back to the Brian Billick days, obviously, as well. So it's surprising to see that. They go and trade for Tre'Davious White. I see where you're at on this. Look, they need a defensive help. I don't know how much it moves the needle. For what they gave up, which was a 2027, I think, seventh round pick, I would have made that trade in Kansas City for a guy. I mean, honestly, like, I don't know why that, if that was all it took. Normally, I hate when people see a guy get traded and they're like, well, they should have got him here. And like, we do that too often with players. And Brett Veach, obviously, is as good as it gets in the NFL right now as a GM. But that was one I wouldn't have minded some depth, Tre'Davious White there to be in the mix with these young corners that Kansas City has now that Jalen Watson's done for the year.
The only thing I worry about is bringing too many veterans on. Is when you bring veterans on, it does push back the maturation of the young players.
Okay.
Like, to get good at football, you got to play football. Like all the reps in practice, all the visualization of what you would have done when you're on the field. You never know until you know. You never know what a guy's going to react to in the fourth quarter. It's a tight game. It's, you know, an all-pro wideout lineup, and he's running the go route, and the ball's in the air. How is that young man going to rise to the occasion? Sometimes some of the most successful careers are built upon early years of failure, and we have to go through some of those growing pains with some of these young guys to see if they are – you know, going to be something.
Does the three-peat aspect, though, I hear you. It totally makes sense, Barber, 100%. But does the fact that this is a three-peat campaign and they're making moves, whether it's D-Hop trade or otherwise, they're not going to let anything get in their way from accomplishing history and all-time bragging rights, three-peat, never been done in the Super Bowl era in the NFL?
I can appreciate the accolade. I can appreciate the goal of having a three-peat season. I can appreciate the historic value of it, but I don't know if I can sell a team on, hey, our number one priority this year is something that's never been done before in the history of football, and let's go ahead and sacrifice the next 2 or 3 years of
success. But a seventh round pick for Tre'Davious White. Like, with all due respect to Roland Wallace, I'll be honest, I had no idea who the hell he was until 3 weeks ago. And I don't know. Like, if you're being honest, if I asked you about him in training camp,
he made a big interception.
I know.
That was a big interception.
I know.
In that moment in that game.
For sure. No, I'm saying, like, I didn't know who he was. And he's played very well for an undrafted guy. My point is that, like, is he capable of improving enough by the time you get to the playoffs to where he's not a vulnerability, just because he wasn't somebody that any most fans, if we surveyed 100 fans on August 20th or 15th up in St. Joe, hell, if I brought his name up to you, if you when we were up in St. Joe, if you came on set, and it was very hot up there after practice, I go, hey, man, what'd you think of Roland Wallace today? You would have been like, who?
No, I would have been like, CRW. Oh. That's my guy. Oh. CRW, boy. That's
now he's your guy.
I would have more respect that you even know the bottom of the barrel. Like, you got to know the roster.
Oh, I know. Everybody brings up Justin Ross and Nico Armijo 100 times.
Oh, see, there you go. All that, you know, that was a lot of, like, you had a lot of something in your voice right there. A lot of, like, a little extra.
I still feel like the whole Tre'Davious White thing was the Ravens were so bad in the secondary that they just had to do anything where they're just rolling out Tre'Davious White and praying that he comes up with his 2019 form, where I don't think the Chiefs had that level of desperation where they needed to go and get a guy that hasn't been able to play that well here for a few years now, like in the league period. I think that they trust what they have in the development with the defensive coaching staff to not have to go and not necessarily take a risk, but feel that level of desperation that Baltimore had to get a corner.
Drew, to be a Cincinnati fan, you think totally different than the entire Bengals organization, because what you said actually made a lot of sense. Like you probably need to send some memos or some emails One Bengal Way or something and say, hey,
there might be a coaching vacancy pretty soon. You can apply. Zach Taylor about to lose his job.
No, he's not, man.
If they end up with 8 wins, I think he might.
If they miss the playoffs, I think it's a possibility. But the fact that they made the Super Bowl, Barber, I think that they're always going to hang their hat on, well, they went to a Super Bowl with Zach Taylor, so they would have to have another losing season, I think, for it to happen, actually.
I think he's a great coach. I think that, unfortunately, T. Higgins hasn't been available the majority of the season. So
sure. Yep.
I think we knew what Orlando Brown Jr. was. And we kind of send the Trojan horse over to Cincinnati, and they paid him and doubled down on him. And
he's been better,
Drew.
This is
I'm serious,
Barber. See, this has been the thing.
All never mind. You know what?
This has been.
Go ahead. He's drinking. He's dressed up like the bank. I mean,
he's wearing an AJ Green.
I thought we was having a serious conversation about talent.
This has been the thing. Look, it's great to be optimistic as a fan. There's nothing wrong with that. We've all been that comment right there is what I've been talking about. I want the Ravens to put you out of your misery tonight because the false hope and like acting like things are great. They have a great offense. Well, they don't have a great defense. That's why they stink right now.
Correct. Orlando Brown Jr. is part of the offense, though. I didn't say that he's the best left tackle in the league. I'm saying that I don't think he's top 10. But I think that he has been very productive much more this year when he's played than he has been previously. So they're getting more for what they paid for, I think, this season than they had previously.
Oh, okay. Then what they paid? I was gonna say, I don't think he's outperforming the contract he got, though. I disagree. He's not outperforming the contract.
I mean, if he's outperforming the contract, he'd be a top five. I don't know top three left tackle.
If he's, I don't think he's meeting the dollar amount. Quote.
When is the last time have we seen a team with only offense be
in the NFL?
Yeah,
the Chiefs lost an AFC title game when that happened.
Yeah, I don't
seasonally successful and going to playoffs. And I mean. No, I know Danon's going to come on, and he's an offensive guy, and he thinks that, like, offense is, like, you know, walk on water and all that. But, I mean, it's been said over and over again, and you can not like it, you can disagree with it, but, I mean, statistically, defensive football wins championships.
Facts.
Like, you got to be able to stop somebody. I mean, going back to the greatest show on turf with the Rams, right? That defense, when it came time to get after the quarterback, I mean, they did what they had to do to, you know, in the playoffs to stifle people's offense. If you cannot stop the run, get after the quarterback, and eliminate explosive plays, those are the three mantras that our defense is doing at a higher level and being more consistent than anybody else in the NFL right now. And it's not always going to come out with sack totals or interception totals or turnover totals. It's just a collective ideal mindset, like a Mamba mentality throughout this defense, is that everybody's going to do their job at a high level, whatever their assignment is, to the highest of their ability. That doesn't mean you're not going to give up a play. That doesn't mean Otten is not going to run out and up and score a touchdown, or Drake London is going to fake a flare and go up the side. Yeah, I mean, there's mental errors that happens on every ball club. But if you can eliminate those things and make it...
So do you think that Baltimore, not that they have no shot, but do you think that because they struggle so much on defense that they're not a legitimate threat because they don't have that defense to win the Super Bowl?
They are susceptible to anybody doing what we did to them last year. When it's a 3-point contest and we're just throwing up threes and whoever makes the most wins and we're not relying on defense, then whoever gets hot, I mean, you just in the moment you get hot and it's the playoffs, you move on. Collectively, if you got three phases, your defense is holding everybody to under, what is it, 28th game in a row?
Yeah,
under,
29th game, I 29th think. 29th in a row
under 29 points. And a lot of those are under 20. And offensively, you're averaging, you know, mid-20s. First time we scored 30 in the whole calendar year.
Since the Bears game last year, I think is what it was, isn't it? I think that was right. The last time they blew out somebody. Defensively, yeah, it's 29 straight opponents under 28 points. That matches that 05 to 07 Ravens defense that, that was a long streak. That held for 17 seasons. That Rams team you referenced from the 99 Super Bowl, fourth best defense in football that year. So not only did they have the great offense, they had fourth best points against.
But nobody remembers them because the offense was just putting up 40 points a game. You know, say, so you can, it's easy to not think about the work that the defense is doing when the offense is lighting up the scoreboard. That's not the case this season here in Kansas City. And I think that what you see is the Leo Chenaults, you see the Shamari Connors, you see the Reeds. I mean, he's been playing phenomenal.
Should have had a pick. He almost had it. He'll tell you that.
Those are the ones that come back and get you. But Bolton and Drew Tranquil and then all the guys. I mean, we can go all eight guys up front, and it's just a different guy getting pressure, different guys, not just Chris Jones. And that's what we're seeing in Cincinnati. It's Hendrickson or nothing. It's if he doesn't get to the quarterback, 100%. You're giving up first down,
so
touchdown.
Who do you think wins tonight then? I told you who I want to win, and I think Chiefs fans should want to win, Baltimore. But who do you actually think wins? Baltimore's a 5.5, 6-point favorite tonight. Yes.
I think Baltimore wins because they've been riding heavy on King Henry. And
he's been unbelievable.
I mean, I think minimum rush of 20 plus yards every game except for ours. I think I read somewhere like his one of the longest runs he's had in every game so far this season. He's had at least a 20 yard or more gain in every game except for the game against us where he had his longest run was 9 yards.
It's crazy.
So I mean that's not just a one-off. That's a trend. It's something that offensively they're doing that other teams defensively can't. You just can't sustain it for four quarters. And eventually, King Henry he's leaning on you. That offensive line leaning on you, thinking about Lamar coming out the back door as far as a quarterback power or quarterback bootleg or something, holds up somebody on the front side. It makes you hesitate. You check your feet. Because you got Lamar coming out, so your eyes kind of lose a little bit of discipline. And that's the only thing he needs to get his shoulders he's a fast guy, too, to get going vertical. And he's exploiting some guys.
Sean Barber hanging out with us for another hour or so right here on Cody and Gold. Up next, we'll get to what's trending. And then how about Danan Hughes? Let's talk to another former Chief. Get an offensive perspective on this thing heading into the Broncos game. That's coming up next on Cody and Gold.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.